Good morning. Welcome to the Driller Newscast, a weekly update on the news and stories impacting the drilling industry. I'm your host, Brock Yorty, and we have an exciting week of news. We're going to start in Alaska with the North Slope gas release incident that happened in March by ConocoPhillips. Next, we're going to jump into the waters of the United States discussion with the EPA and the Army and how right now, May 23rd, if you're listening this morning at the release of this episode, at 4:30 tonight to 6:30, there is a live stream of roundtable number 2 involved with the Midwest. Finally, this week's news on mining is going to drive right into our feature where we're going to discuss rare minerals required for green energy technology and the regulations and what we're doing as a country right now to drive a better supply chain for those. But before we get into all of that, let's talk some safety. For this week's safety topic, I would like to discuss inhalation of fine particulates and the damage it can have to our bodies. In many other industries, including mining and blast hole drilling and quarry work, things that we are involved in a lot of dust and silica exposure, we focus a lot on this. But in the drilling industry, we have these same possibilities with mixing of drilling fluids and grouts and cements and other fine particulates we're working with. And we need to consider the damage that's happening to our bodies. So, workers who inhale fine particulates are at risk of developing serious, sometimes fatal illnesses such as lung disease called silicosis, lung cancer, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. Also, this inhalation has been linked to kidney disease. So, as we decide who on the job site is going to be mixing our drilling fluids, or grouting, or using cement, or graphites, these fine particulates that can get into our lungs and start to block up, we need to be using an N95 dust mask. You know, that's going to help us prevent 95% of that particulate. And obviously, if we get a industrial hygienist on site and we start doing a full study and say maybe you're mixing these drilling fluids inside a box truck, we need to understand that that 300 mesh particulate, we may need a better respiratory plan in place, but we're not going to talk about that today, other than you should make sure that you have proper fit to that mask. Beyond that, gentlemen, ladies, we're a dirty industry, and hygiene is a big factor in preventing this particulate inhalation. As we wrap up mixing, we need to be dusting off. We need to be washing our hands before we grab that bottle of water or we decide to grab something quick out of the truck for lunch. You know, it all comes down to that. And at the end of the day, from where the job truck is situated on site to you all climbing in, closing the windows, and driving back to the shop, we need to be removing all of our gear that's covered in dust and doing a thorough job of cleaning up before we get in there. You know, I know a story of a industrial hygienist that was taking a look at a horizontal directional job site that was doing a lot of mixing a day, 8-10 pallets of bentonite along with polymers. And the men mixing, no issue. And they were trying to decide what the largest exposure was. And that afternoon, somebody put their monitor on the rearview mirror of the truck, and 4 people jumped in the truck with the windows up because it was hot out and turned on the air conditioner and they drove back. And the highest levels that they'd gotten all day was in that time. And it took some time to figure out who wasn't handling their gear properly and letting it hang from the rearview mirror, but it showed that jumping in the truck covered in all of that dust and fine particulate and letting it circulate in the vehicle with everybody was a really bad exposure. You know, and silicosis is on that same level as hearing protection and damage on just the fact that it happens slowly and then we don't really realize how bad we have damaged our lungs until it's too late. And knowing a gentleman who passed away from silicosis and having that discussion, he said, Brock, I would have much rather had my arm teared off at 22 than to be slowly suffocating at 70. So those are the things we need to think about. We can look at our respirable crystal silicon standards, 1926 period 1153, and you can see that everything that says drills on it doesn't say we need any sort of protective mask, but we need to realize the exposure. And the next time we see the new guy that looks like he's mixed more mud on his belly than he has through the hopper, we need to make sure he's being smart and being cleaned up, and that we're not taking that home and tracking it amongst our house and other places. Be safe out there. And now on to the news impacting the drilling industry this week. In early March, a disposal well drilling project in Alaska's North Slope for ConocoPhillips intersected a shallow gas reservoir. The gas release was first detected on March 4th. The company, in a statement last week, said that by March 8th, it had secured the location, determined the most probable gas source, and established a control flow path for the gas into its central facility at the Alpine development. The flow of gas from the source was stopped as of March 29th. The waste disposal well was cemented to surface, and the company said ConocoPhillips Alaska said no gas had been detected beyond the CD1 pad. The best news of this situation is there were no recordable injuries, no damage to the tundra, and no wildlife impacted by these reports. The company says it will incorporate its findings from its investigation into future projects. Obviously, we'll see more investigation into this and we'll continue to follow this, but when we're a responsible drilling company and we act quickly, we can see how fast our measures can be taken to prevent impacts. And let's face it, we need to be able to continue these drilling projects. Good job, ConocoPhillips. Now, jumping over to the waters of the United States. If you're listening to this Monday morning, May 23rd, this evening at 4 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Eastern is the second of the 10 regional roundtables held by the EPA, U.S. Army, and regional stakeholders. You can find the live stream at epa.gov/public-outreach-and-stakeholder-engagement. Each roundtable will allow stakeholders to engage and discuss their experiences with implementing the definition of the waters of the United States, including challenges and opportunities within the geographic areas for those roundtables. This discussion will also provide an opportunity for participants to discuss geographic similarities and differences, particular water resources that are characteristic of or unique to each region, and regionally specific feedback about implementation. This all comes down to the Clean Water Act. And the Clean Water Act prohibits the discharge of pollutants from a point source to navigable waters, unless otherwise authorized under the Act. Navigable waters are defined in the Act as the waters of the United States, including the territorial seas. The waters of the United States is a threshold term establishing the geographic scope of the federal jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act. The term waters of the United States is not defined by the Act, but has been defined by the EPA and the Army in the regulations since the 1970s, and jointly implemented in the agency's respective programmatic activities. These regional roundtables are one important mechanism for the agencies to consider the regional variations in the implementation of WOTUS, given the diverse water quality and quantity conditions in diverse parts of the United States. The regional roundtables will provide opportunities to discuss all of these topics and advocate for what's important for each region, from mining to agricultural needs to how these are now being defined as standing water in the middle of a pasture for a large cattle owner. This is a big deal. And with the 8 remaining roundtables, with roundtable number 9 happening right now, this evening, if you're listening on May 23rd, it's time for us to be paying attention to this and advocating for the right implementation. And it's excellent to see that we're having these roundtables throughout the country. All of these roundtables are going to be hosted virtually, and you can find them at epa.gov/WOTUS/public-outreach. It's very easy to get to the website and see these, but you should definitely check out your region or all of them and be paying attention to the weeks to come on how this is going to impact the waters of the United States. This is a big deal, especially as we look at the Colorado River Compact and the Great Lakes Compact and all the rest of the water news that's going on. This is something that we need to be involved in from a state association all the way up to the national association. And we're seeing our important associations doing the right thing and keeping us up to date. Now let's jump over into the Western United States and mining and how that is aiding into everything we need to be doing for our green energy initiatives for net zero. Salt Lake City, Utah. Rio Tinto officials and Governor Spencer Cox unveiled a plan in early May that at the Kennecott refinery west of Salt Lake City, where tellurium will be produced. This was reported by Utah's Fox 13. The company says it is one of two in the U.S. to produce tellurium, which is listed as a critical mineral by the U.S. government. Most of tellurium production comes from China and other countries. Rio Tinto is working with the U.S. Department of Energy on ideas to produce more tellurium. The company said it hopes to produce 20 tons of tellurium each year. If we can produce it here, we're going to be a lot better off, said Cox. We need this product. It is what we use in lots of different aspects, from vulcanizing rubber, but most importantly, it is what we're using in solar panels. And so this is a big deal. And this jumps right into our main story of the week, which is on rare minerals and our supply chain in the United States and the initiatives we're taking to get there. For our main story for the week, I want to continue this discussion on what just happened with Rio Tinto and Salt Lake City. See, these critical minerals provide the building blocks for many modern technologies and are essential to our national security and economic prosperity. These minerals, like the rare earth elements lithium and cobalt, can be found in products from our computers to household appliances. But more importantly, they are key inputs into clean energy technologies like batteries, electric vehicles, wind turbines, and solar panels, which is what we're working for that net zero. As the entire world transitions to a clean energy economy, global demand for these critical minerals is set to skyrocket by 400 to 600% over the next few decades. And for lithium and graphite used in electric vehicles and batteries, the demand will increase as much as 4,000%. We are increasingly dependent on foreign sources for many of these processed versions of these minerals. Globally, China is the powerhouse controlling the market for processing and refining cobalt, lithium, and many rare earth and critical minerals. In February 2022, the White House released an initiative to secure these critical minerals. It's called a Made in America Supply Chain for Critical Minerals. This statement followed the one-year anniversary of the Executive Order 14017, which ordered a review of vulnerabilities in our critical minerals and material supply chains within the next 100 days. You can go to whitehouse.gov and look at that 100-day supply chain study and understand what we need to do to have these 21st century methods in place to be able to continue on all of our net zero goals. In these studies, we can see we need to create a 21st century standard for the extraction and processing of critical minerals. The White House recommends that the government works with private sector and non-governmental stakeholders to develop and adopt comprehensive sustainability standards for essential minerals such as lithium, cobalt, nickel, copper, and other minerals. The White House further recommends establishing a team with expertise in mine permitting, environmental law, to identify gaps in statutes and regulations that may need to be updated to ensure new production meets strong environmental standards throughout the life cycle of the project, ensuring meaningful community consultation, and to continue consultation with tribal nations. We're seeing this in the news from the mines that have asked for permitting near Yellowstone, or mines that are near tribal lands, or tribal lands that want to open their own mine. The goal is to examine the mining process at all stages and to understand how we can reduce time, cost, and risk of permitting without compromising our strong environmental benchmarks. So how are we going to do this? It's recommended that a federal agency led by the Department of Interior, with the support of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, establish a working group comprised of agencies such as the Department of Agriculture and the Environmental Protection Agency and others to identify potential sites where critical minerals can be produced sustainably and responsibly in the United States while adhering to the highest environmental, labor, community engagement, and sustainability standards. It is recommended that the federal agency work with private sector, states, tribal nations, and stakeholders, including the representatives of the labor, impacted communities, and environmental justice leaders, to expand sustainable, responsible, critical mineral production and processing in the United States. This is huge. This is exactly what the mining industry needs. We need to be sustainable so that we can continue to push our net zero goals and expand across the country, be able to sustain advances in technology. And that was from February, after a year ago, February, that executive order was written. On May 11th, the White House convened over 20 representatives from states, tribes, and the mining industry, along with environmental groups, labor unions, automakers, legal experts, and other stakeholders on the 150th anniversary of the signing of the Mining Law of 1872 to discuss the need for reforms and improvements to establish a strong 21st century environmental and engagement standards that would allow for the responsible and sustainable development of domestic hard rock minerals. This is what we need. They just met, and you think about this, they met in February and talked about what we needed for a supply chain, and then they brought these great men and women together. The meeting was the first external engagement of the Department of Interior-led interagency working group of the mining regulations, laws, and permitting, which is charged with providing recommendations to Congress on how to reform the mining law to ensure new production meets strong environmental standards throughout the life cycle of a project. So we can get these projects approved and that we can hold people accountable and we can do exactly what we need to do in order to be sustainable on our own. The goal of these meetings is to reduce the time, cost, and risk of mine permitting. Additional stakeholders meeting will be held over the next coming months, and comments can and also be submitted in response to the request for information that was issued by the Department of Interior on March 31st. If you have comments, questions, you want to get involved in this, these comments can be made through July 31st. at regulations.gov. This is excellent news. We needed an overhaul of the mining laws of 1872, and we need to be discussing these with the experts of the industry so that we can stop having this dependence on foreign minerals. And when you look at the list of individuals that was at this meeting, from Tom Palmer, president and CEO of Newmont, to the executive director of Earthworks, and Joe Britton, executive director of Zero Emission Transportation Associations, and the president and CEO of National Mining Association, and the chairman of the Nez Perce Tribe, and the CEO and the National Wildlife Federation, Colin O'Mara. This is an excellent group of people to get together to have this open discussion so that we can progress our drilling industry responsibly. So drilling progresses civilization from what we need to look at for water, for the water crisis, to the precious minerals we need to be able to utilize to be able to have the best net zero green technology out there. And that falls right back into responsible practices of our oil and gas, big brothers and sisters, and the mining industry. Thank you for joining us for episode 12. We covered a lot this week, and we didn't have a special guest because there was just so much to talk about, from the waters of the United States to what's going on with the mining industry. Make sure you're getting on one of these live streams for the roundtables for the waters of the United States. And if you're involved in mining and in environmental situations, get involved. Get your comments and questions submitted by July 31st. Let's continue to progress our industry responsibly. And drillers, it's going to happen through you. You are the knowledge when it comes to what it's going to take to responsibly drill these projects and do it the right way. There's a lot of tribalism that we've done in the drilling industry to become very good at discovering the unknown in very remote locations. It's time for us to make sure we're sharing that information with the men and women that are on these roundtables and having these discussions so that they know exactly how we need to be advocated for as well. Be safe. Have a great week.